Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. In this episode, we're sharing the seminar that Dawn Harker gave at our recent online conference. It was really helpful, really insightful, and everyone who heard it noted how it had opened their eyes to new perspectives on the adoptee experience. It was so good we felt it was a shame not to share, so we've added it to our normal podcast here. Dawn wasn't asked to filter or edit her perspective or talk, and consequently, this is her views and answers to the questions that were put to her at the end of the session. As always, if you've got experience of adoption from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through the Facebook or Twitter page or email us at aandfpodcast@gmail.com.
So Dawn, first of all, thank you for doing this. It's great. You did one of our podcast conversations, didn't you, a little while ago?
Yeah, it was last year.
And you've kindly agreed to come in today. So I'm not going to stop you in any way, shape or form. You don't have a presentation as such, do you? But you've maybe got some poll questions for people.
So, I do.
Yeah.
I'm going to open with a poll question, actually.
Good. So. And so what I'll do is I will mute myself and I will clear my screen, but I will come back at 2:10 and do some questions with you, unless you've...
Brilliant. I'll see you then.
So here's Dawn, everybody.
So hi, everyone. Just a little bit of a background about me. My name's Dawn. I am 26. I'm an adult adoptee. I went into care when I was 2.5 and I moved in with my parents when I was 4. This was in 1998. And my adoption was finalised in 2000. I was placed as a younger sibling and I had 6 older half siblings. But weren't adopted with me. And since being adopted, my younger sister went back into care. So of the 8 children that were removed, only myself has stayed being adopted. So speaking from the experience of an adopted adult, basically, and I kind of want to cover a little bit about my story, but also my approach to accessing my records and also reunion and communication with my birth family. So before I begin, I'd actually like to start with a poll. The question is about how many of you have actually spoken to an adoptee. So if we can have that poll pop up, maybe. I think this is a different poll, but that's okay. We can start with this one anyway. So this one is about resources. Have you gathered resources that you can share with your children that reflect the adoption experience, whether that's books, films, magazines? So yeah, if we have a couple of seconds to answer that. Brilliant. So if we can just get the results up. Fabulous. So it's really nice to see that so many of you, say 82% of you have, and 16% of you are planning to. That's really encouraging. I would say part of the resources that you should possibly engage with is other adopted adults, because we've been through the experience and we are a font of knowledge, if you will. So I want to go back into kind of my experience and then why I think it's so important to have those resources there. As I said, I was 4 when I moved in with my parents, so I knew I was adopted. It wasn't something that could be hidden from me. So my parents were always very open and honest about that, and it's something I've really appreciated growing up. I would discourage anyone from hiding it or making experience. Because it's such an integral part to your identity. And I know a lot of people say that identity is something that, you know, you learn and as you grow, you create it, but you do have those biological pulls and ties. And that's something I found as I've grown up has become more and more important. So growing up, I was very much someone who didn't talk about my adoption. When people asked me about it, I was like, I don't care. I don't want to talk about it. A lot of people would ask me when they found out I was adopted, they would ask if I wanted to meet my birth family, if I had any interesting contacts or wanted to know who they were. And I was always like adamant that I didn't. It was something I was absolutely not interested in. But as I've got older, that has changed. So a couple of years ago, I decided I needed to access my records. I didn't really know enough about my past. And it was really starting to create some identity issues for myself. So I applied to the council that handled my adoption for some records, and I ended up getting 5 pieces of paper back. On these pieces of paper, there were very, very general information about me. A lot of it was incorrect. So it said I have blonde hair and blue eyes. I'm naturally brunette with brown eyes, which was quite like frustrating for me as someone who was trying to find out about themselves, and the information I was getting from the people who were supposed to record it was wrong. I also had the dates of my birth were wrong. Information about my siblings was wrong. So I always found that trying to get the support that I needed and finding out the information I wanted to know was something that I was struggling with. And since then, I've been blogging, which is something that's really helped me, because before I started blogging, I never really spoke about my adoption with my adoptive parents, whereas now I'm that we have open communication. It's something I do talk to them about, especially in recent years. I have reached out to birth family and attempted contact and communication. And when I originally did it, I was embarrassed and ashamed, and I felt really guilty for doing it, like it was an insult to my parents, saying that, you know, you brought me up, but I need to find out about these people. So I never told them I did it. I created a fake Facebook profile. I used a different name. I just used some pictures of mine. And I started messaging. I messaged 6 of my birth siblings. I also messaged my birth mom. And I got some feedback, you know, the relationship. I got to talk to quite a few people. I asked some of the questions. The conversations didn't go how I wanted them to go. I took advantage of my birth mum. I went into that reunion, if you'll call it that, with a lot of resentment and anger because of what I had read and the files I had seen, and ended up, you know, I didn't go in with support. I hadn't spoken to my parents about it. I hadn't spoken to my friends and family about it. I had created this fake persona, essentially this fake profile, and I wasn't being genuine to myself. And it kind of left me that I was unaccountable for my behavior as well, which, you know, no one wants to say that they weren't, you know, maybe the nicest person, but I definitely wasn't. And as a result of that communication with my birth mom has now completely shut down, and it's at an impasse where we just can't talk to each other anymore, and I would really like to restart it, but I'm just not in a position where I can. You know, I broke her trust. She lost me when I was 2. I came back into her life. I took advantage of her, and then I walked out again. So she has a lot of resentment and anger towards me for that. And I'm now in a position where I don't have the resources or support to engage with her again, which is really, like, I find really difficult. It's also, for me, reunion is something I'm 26. I'm still going through the process of reunion. Earlier last year, I got in contact with some of my dad's birth family, which my adoptive parents weren't very supportive of, because my dad was, you know, my birth parents both used drugs, they both drank alcohol, they were both quite violent, we were neglected. So we came from a very disadvantaged background. So wanting to reach out to my dad, my parents were obviously worried about my mental health, my personal health and my safety. But I needed to know, I needed to ask some questions. So I reached out, and I found out actually that my birth dad was dead, and I only found out by doing a Google search, and I found his death certificate. I couldn't get a hold of him. I didn't have contact information for any of that side of the family. I did try and message a few people, and I got hold of someone, but he overwhelmed me with a lot of information. I was unable to, like, proceed down that. So I still need the support, you know, it's a massively overwhelming thing. There's this whole life out there that you don't really, like, you don't know about, you don't really get to engage with, people don't want to talk about, especially for someone of my background. When you come from a negative background, people are like, oh, you're so lucky to be adopted, you're so lucky to be away from that lifestyle. And yes, I'm really lucky to have my parents, you know, I'm lucky because they're lovely parents, I'm lucky because I have a really nice family. I'm not lucky to be adopted. In fact, I'm unlucky that I was born into the circumstances I was born into, and I'm unlucky that I had to go through what I went through at such a young age before I was able to you know, have that secure and safe environment. I'd also say for me, reunion is something that I float around with. I find it really difficult. Some days, you know, I accepted that it's not something that I can do. Maybe the people don't like me. The conversations I've had made me feel really resented. But other days, you know, I recently broke my ankle and I had surgery to have a bit of bone removed. But part of the background check was all these questions about my medical history and family medical history, and having to answer 20 questions with, I don't know. You know, have you got a history of heart disease? I don't know. Is there a history of cancer? I don't know. It makes you think about it, and you want to get in contact with those people and ask them those questions. Even just, you know, maybe I can't have a relationship with them, but I have so many questions about my medical history or my personal history, or why exactly was I put into care, what exactly happened, because the information I've received doesn't cover that for me. So as I said, when I first applied for my records, I got 5 pages. The medical section was one line. It said you had chickenpox at the age of 3. Since then, you know, I've discovered that my birth mom and birth side of the family had a lot of schizophrenia in it, so there's obviously a possibility of that being inherited. I know my dad died young with a heart problem, so that's potentially something inherited, but I still don't have access to the medical records that I believe that I deserve. Also, that a lot of the information I get is involves, as I've said, I've got 7 other siblings even. A lot of that information is redacted because it involves other minors. So I'll be halfway through a sentence, but I can't read the rest of it, and I don't really understand why I'm not allowed to know that history about myself, because I lived it was my experience, and I don't think it's protecting me by not showing me. As adoptive parents, I think I don't want to say it's your responsibility, but as parents, you want to do what's best for your child. You want to look out for them. And I think a lot of adoptees, not all, I can't speak for every adoptee out there, I say at some point, reunion or communication will be something that crosses their mind. As I said, maybe they'll just have questions about their medical history. Maybe they'll have questions about their past or their identity. Maybe they want to know about their family. You know, like I said, I've got 7 siblings who've all got kids, but have I got grandparents? Have I got cousins? So your job as parents is to be there for that journey and support them. It may not feel like it's the right thing to do, but the more you shun away from those open conversations, it will happen behind your back, whether you like it or not. And it will be more damaging to them to not have your support should things go wrong. But also, you know, if they have a really positive experience, if they find out that they've got a sister and they both love art and they really want to go to a gallery together, it's going to be a much better experience for them if they're able to talk that through with you than keep it a secret and something that they've got to keep hidden. So personally, the way I've come away from reunion is I'm angry, I'm hurt, I feel guilty, I feel like I've hurt my adopted parents, I know I've hurt my birth family, I've got people who resent me on both sides, people who don't agree with what I'm doing, people who tell me I've not done what's right for my adopted parents, I've not done what's right for my birth family, but I've done what I felt was right for me, and I wish I had had more support with that. I want to say I don't want to warn you off reunion. I think the approach that you need to take is that you have to have the option there. Should your child elect to do it, you have to have that option on the table. So if they need or want to consider this journey, there's a way that you can make that transition easier. Have some ideas of what would have helped me personally. So firstly, I would say offer support. This can be as simple as sitting with them, helping them find people on Facebook or ancestry.com. They might want your help drafting a message. They might need you to sit in the room if they make a phone call. But it might also be as simple as sitting there and listening to the experience and hearing what your child needs. Alternatively, what they might need is for you to take a step back and go, I know this is your journey and I need you, you need to do it. So I need to give you the space to do it. But I'm here should you need anything. I'd also say the second thing that would have really helped me is to be understanding, even if you don't understand. So my parents don't necessarily understand or support me wanting contact, but by attempting to understand, it makes it so much easier. Research contact, speak to other adoptees, see what they did that helped them, see what went wrong, find out about good experiences from contact, bad experiences from contact, see if there are services out there that will help you make that contact. Are there groups that support it? Are there online meetings you can go to where people have had that contact? Is there where you can initiate that contact? You know, it might not be something you can understand, but by educating, you can try to understand. And that's one of the biggest steps you can take as an adoptive parent. I also think it's important not to be naive about the experience. And this is like both ends of the spectrum. I don't expect it to be easy. Don't expect it to be simple just because you've researched it. You might have spoken to 100 adoptees, you've spoken to your child about the communication, you've got all the tools in place, but that doesn't mean it's going to be simple. It's a huge step to go through reunion and contact. It can be draining, and 1 week it might be going really well and the next month they might completely disengage, but don't let that stop you doing it. And also on the other end of the spectrum, don't expect the worst. You know, you can prepare for negatives or assume that something bad might happen, but you don't know how that reunion is going to go. So you should go into it open-minded and there as a support system, not as someone who's there to judge. Another thing that I think is really important for adoptive parents is not to take it personally. These children are your children. They love you. And they, you know, I don't speak for all adoptees, but we appreciate our parents because they are our parents. They've brought us up. They've nurtured us. They've looked after us when we're sick. They've taken care of us when, you know, a boy's or girl's broken our heart and taken us shopping for a prom outfit, gone on holiday with them. We love our parents. Wanting contact or reunion is not a reflection on my relationship with my parents, and it's not a reflection of your child's relationship with you. Your children are doing it for personal reasons, and they may or may not want to discuss those with you, but you need to try as separate to your relationship with them. It's, I would say, innate human nature to want to know about yourselves. You know, we all reminisce and tell stories of, do you remember that time when, or do you remember when we used to go on holidays as a kid? And do you remember that person doing this with us? So, you know, it's not that you haven't done enough. It's not that your kids don't love you. It's a natural inquisitiveness. And really it should be encouraged, because the sooner they're able to be happy with who they are and where they come from, the happier and more well-rounded they will be as an individual. That's not to say they won't face difficulties, but, you know, it's a step-by-step process. I also want to say that as parents, I know there are trepidations. If your child come from a background similar to mine, you may expect the experience to turn out negative. You also may have negative opinions of the person who's they're reaching out for contact with. But don't voice that negativity. Don't say, I told you so. If that contact doesn't go to how that child hoped it would, but it went exactly how you expected. Hearing "I told you so" will not help or benefit that child in any way. And if anything, it might cause irreparable damage to your relationship, because that's a big moment in their life and they're relying on you and they don't need to be told that they were wrong. I would also say as well, not to let that negativity cloud the process. Don't let your personal feelings cloud reality. Someone whose child went into care when they were 25, 10, 15, 20 years ago, they're not the same person. The person who went through that experience has changed. And that's not wishful thinking, because I want to think that every birth parent has got better and the relationship is going to be good. It might still be negative. They might still be very similar, but they are not the same person. I am not the same person as the person I was 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 6 months ago. I've grown and changed in that short amount of time. So you should have some open-mindedness to how that person may have developed, because although they might not have been able to be there when your child was young, they can be there now, maybe, potentially. And that open-mindedness is only ever going to really serve you. So yeah, that's some of my key points about reunion. I'd also, I did mention my records a couple of times. I'd just like to touch upon what you can do as parents to help your children with that. Because as I said, a lot of them were wrong. It was really hard to get hold of. I still technically haven't had my records. I've had an addendum. I've had a summary of the information that's in my files. So as in care for 2 years, I was monitored since birth, and my parents have been monitored since before I was born, and I have 15 pieces of paper to sum up my childhood. And that's nothing, none of it's to do with what I was like in foster care. It's 15 pieces of paper to sum up my experience with my birth family, and none of it's detailed. It's all very rough and inaccurate, as I said, inaccurate. You as parents can support your child by gathering up as much information. So should there come a time when they want that information, they want those details, they're interested in their records, so they want to know about their health history, and they may say to you, "Oh, mum, oh, dad, I really want to know about my past," they're able to come to you and you go, "Oh, well, actually, I spoke to your social worker. We've got X files, X information for you." Or, "Do you know what? We don't have this, but we will help you find it." I just think it's so important that you support that investigation, because the more you're on side, the more positive it will be. No matter how negative the experiences are, the more you will progress together and as a unit. It's been, like I said, my parents aren't super supportive, and it has caused a massive sticking point in our family, because I couldn't talk to my parents about reunion, I couldn't talk to them about my files, and it's only now that I'm older and I reflect back that I'm able to talk to them, that communication barrier has been open. But the damage has already been done, and had we started these conversations when I was 15, 16, I think we would have moved forward a lot better and had a lot more success and positivity in it. And so I also have another poll about whether, I think, well, I'm not sure what order it's going to come up in. This one's about whether you've discussed or considered what your approach to reunion might be. So maybe if we could have that poll up. Yeah, amazing. So I'll just give you a couple of seconds to answer that.
You might need quite a while for that one.
Yeah, give people time. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Results. It's really interesting to see, actually, that, 45% of you have discussed it and aren't sure what your approach will be, and about 25% of you haven't discussed it or considered your approach, but you plan on. And that 30% of you have an approach prepared. I think that's a massive change from my experience and the other adoptees I know. It's a massive change. A lot of them, their parents aren't willing to discuss it, don't discuss it. not with them, not with their social worker. It's not a plan that's in place. I know earlier we were talking about as well, we were talking about letterbox contact and communication, and that's something that I originally had in place, and my adoptive parents kind of let it fall through the net a bit. I used to get cards and letters from birth siblings, but my parents thought that it wasn't in my best interest and that I didn't really recognize or understand it, so it stopped happening. But now that I think back, I regret that it wasn't done more, and I wish that I had, you know, had more communication, because I think if I'd have got to 18, 19, 20 and seen that these people had been invested in me or were interested in me, it would have made reaching out to them a lot easier. Particularly for me, I think sibling communication is so important. So as one of eight, I lost contact with everyone on that side. You know, I have seven siblings I don't speak to, seven brothers and sisters that I grew up with who I now have nothing to do with. And they didn't do anything wrong. You know, they were victims of circumstance the same way I was. And I have so much guilt about being the only one who did. You know, I've got this crazy nice lifestyle and lovely parents. I didn't stay in the care system. I didn't like grow up without a mother and father figure. I've since had more siblings, so my adopted parents went on to have birth children, so I kind of got to have surrogacy siblings, which kind of hits that feeling home more, that I wished that communication had continued. Because I look at my younger brother and sister and I'm very close with them. I get on really well with them, but I'm their older sibling. I'm the oldest in my house. So I'm the older sibling, but actually I'm the baby sibling. There's two of us who were less than a year apart. So we were really, really young. And I actually have six older siblings. What would it have been like to grow up with them? What would it have been like? What would it be like, you know, what would it be like to see my nieces and nephews? I know a lot of them have since gone into care. What would it have been like if I'd have known them? Could I have been able to help? Would I have been able to change the progression of their lives or their experiences? So I think as an adoptee, I implore you to keep those lines of communication open, particularly with those other children. You know, it may not feel right. It may not be something that you think is in the best interest, but you don't have to. It doesn't have to be something that you do all the time. It doesn't have to be the front page agenda. You don't have to go, oh, you've got a letter from this sibling. Oh, you've got contact from your grandparents. But if, you know, they're not interested, but then at 7 years old, they go, oh, did my mummy ever write me a letter? Did my brother ever write me a letter? You've got that contact there. So you can show, yes, this did actually happen, and you communication or conversation. So I guess I know a lot of people will have qualms about children from negative backgrounds. I say negative, you know, that I don't really want to brush it up or make it something fancy, and there isn't. If your child comes from an abusive background, you may worry about the responsibility of opening up those lines of communication, particularly if they're someone that the courts have deemed not fit to bring up that child or children. I would still say find a way to make that communication, that contact happen. My birth father was someone who was in and out of prison. You know, he was definitely not someone my parents would want me around growing up, but I still want to know him. I still have questions and I don't like him. I don't like him from what I know. I don't remember him, but limiting that because of what my parents limiting that because of what they believe is caused me a lot of problems. So, yeah, I probably have so much more I could talk about, but I just I don't know, maybe it's better to do some questions rather than just rambling, Scott, if that's okay.
Gareth, could you kindly join my video, please, so we can do some questions? Thank you very much. Thank you, Don. I think that you're right. We could probably listen to your experience all day, and I think that it's really, it's a key part of this whole process for us as parents right now. And the more we can hear from adoptees or adopted adults, listen, it's all very well hearing, but we have to listen. Right, let's do some questions then, as you're keen to answer some questions. We've got quite a few. Let's see. So this has come up a couple of times, actually. Some people are asking, did you actually have any contact when you were growing up? Letterbox, direct contact?
So I had letterbox contact from, I was really young, so probably when I was 4 or 5. But I didn't know it happened till I was older. And I looked back and I found a couple of cards. And my parents said, oh, yeah, we did have contact, but we stopped it. Never had face-to-face contact. I haven't seen any of my, bar the sister who's adopted with me, I haven't seen any of my other 6 siblings, either of my parents, since I was about 3. So and I'm 26 now, so I haven't seen any of them in 23 years.
So and from your perspective, I mean, obviously you've said this a couple of times, you can't speak for everybody, but what would have made a difference in terms of contact for you, do you think?
Do you know what? Growing up, I'd have said no. Probably all the way till I was 20, I was not interested. I didn't want to know about this other part of my life. I was ashamed and embarrassed, and it was not something I wanted to acknowledge. But then I hit 20 and I was like, oh my God, I've spent 16 years not speaking to these people, and they're related to me, and they're like me? And if I'd had those letters to look back on, or those cards or photos of them growing up, you know, it would have been a lot comforting for me to look back and know that the effort had been made, or that they kind of knew a bit about me. Because then when I decided to reach out, I was a stranger. They literally had no idea about me. You know, the last time they saw me, I was a 3-year-old girl, and I'm not that person anymore.
Another question then, did you have access to Life Story work when you were growing up? Or is this quite a new thing?
No, I did have it. I had a folder that had a picture of my mum and dad in, a picture of them at their wedding, told me what hospital I was born in, and that I went because of some bad circumstances. I think it's pretty much phrased like that. Something bad happened and you went into care. And that was it. That was my Life Story work.
Wow.
And it got done in about a week. And I don't think I saw a social worker after I was 4.5, 5, except when my sister went back into care and they came to assess that.
Right. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, not great.
Eek, that's not a good one, is it? Did you feel conflicted as to the version of your life story you were informed by your adopted parents, social workers, and from your birth family? So was there a conflict?
I've got 3 or 4 versions of the same story. Well, not the same story. I have my adopted parents' version of the childhood I had and how I grew up. I've got the social worker provided version, which is what I have in records that they've provided for me. I have the information I've got from my birth mother that she gave me of her experience, and then I have my story of what I remember and how I relay it, and it's the truth is somewhere between all 4 of them, you know. No, I don't think any one of them is right. but yeah, definitely a conflict. You know, my mum said she never drank because she didn't use drugs, but the report says she does, and medical history would indicate that she did. But then equally, some of the stuff that they've said about my mum, there is no, from what I can see, no proof to it. There's nothing in the reports that indicate it to be true, nothing that I can see that says it's true. So, you know, I kind of have to believe that some of the stuff that they're saying, or it does say, is inaccurate, and what she has said is true. And, you know, equally, my parents love me. They're incredible people. You know, they've done bringing me up.
I think going on some of the chat, you are doing, they've done a good job, but you've done it as well. So
yeah, but I think their experience is colored by what they saw and what they went through. So when they went to, it would have been a panel meeting or a court hearing or something, they met my birth father. They got put in the same waiting room as him, which, you know, was not supposed to happen. We were under a care order. We weren't allowed contact with him. He wasn't supposed to meet the adoptive parents, and they ended up talking for about 10 minutes. So a lot of their experience is colored by the person they met, but he wouldn't be the same person now as he was then, I would like to think. I think everyone grows and changes.
Yeah. What age did you start to feel more curious about your birth family?
I probably started when I was 16. I left school and I had a massive identity crisis. I left a school I had been in to go to college, and suddenly I'd lost all my friends. I wasn't in the same circle. I was doing, I started doing my A-levels. I ended up dropping out because I found the whole thing too traumatic. I was not in a place to be doing it, basically. But at that point, when everything changed, that's when my identity issues kicked in. But it's been an ongoing thing now for about 10 years. I still have questions. I'm still reaching out to birth family members, and I'm not getting the information I think I deserve. People don't want to talk about it necessarily, and that's absolutely their right. Their experience has led them to not want to talk about it. So yeah, 10 years of it, I guess. So 16, teenage years, I would say, is when it kicks off, really.
Okay. And this is interesting, actually, because you just talked about it's an ongoing thing for you. So what sort of support do you get with your journey and the answers? This person says you're a positive role model and your story is inspiring and you're a very strong person, and I'd agree with that. I think we all would.
Thank you very much, everyone. Support I get in... now at 26 is a lot more than I got when I started. When I was at university there, I got some post-adoption counselling with an incredible woman named Dee, who helped me apply for my records. And that was the first time anyone had ever supported me on the journey. I think I was about 24 then, so nothing from 16 to 24. I'd done it all secretly, covertly, behind everyone's back. I'd lied about it, kept it secret. And then at 24, I got the support. And then I started blogging. And then Twitter has been a massive support for me, because all the adoptees I know now are ones I've met on Twitter. I didn't really know any growing up. I didn't know there was no adoption support group for adoptees. There was no one I could engage with, no one who shared my background at all.
Would that be Dee Dee, who's here today? We like Dee, we love Dee. Let's have a look and see what else we've got. One question was, were you bullied over adoption? Was that a thing?
I had an
impact on
you? So my adoptive mother is honestly one of the most incredible women I've ever met, and she's always fought my corner. But I was left out a lot of parties in primary school, and kids didn't want me to come over and play because I was adopted, and that meant I was weird. But also, I would say not necessarily the kids as well, but the parents, because they didn't know about adoption. They didn't want their kids mixing with me, because all they knew is I was adopted, and they assumed that I came from a bad background, and that meant that I would corrupt their children or teach them bad things. Because if you've been born into a negative environment, you're only ever going to bring that to someone, which obviously I was 5-6 years old, that was absolutely not the case. I just wanted friends. I wanted to play. I love being a princess or making mud pies. I didn't really want to hurt anyone or do anything bad.
Both at the same time.
Probably. Mud pies in a pink skirt, lots of washing. I did get left out a lot. And even as I've got older, it's really affected my relationships. I really struggle. I'm 26. I really struggle with dating and having authentic and healthy relationships with people, because people don't understand it. And I take a lot of the baggage and emotional insecurity from the rejection I went through as a child into that. And partners will use it to manipulate or take advantage of me. I'm really lucky now that the person I'm with is really understanding and takes their time to go and find out about things and read about things and know that a lot of it is not directed at me. But I have experienced a lot of abusive, emotionally and physically abusive relationships in the past because of it.
Okay. Sorry, I got distracted on that.
So
what are your thoughts on kind of more open adoption and contacts? Do you think they're the way forward? Do you think they'll be, I mean, we can see that they're starting to be a thing, but what's your thoughts?
I'm really interested in it. Personally, you know, I maybe, as I've said, my parents weren't the best role models, so I maybe wouldn't have wanted open contact with them, but birth siblings, I would have loved that. I mean, I'm sure the professionals, for whatever reason, decided it wasn't right, but I think there should be a way in the future to incorporate, you know, it doesn't have to be every week or every month, but if twice a year they meet up and play in a park or go to a museum or go bowling or something, I can't see how that would be negative. And if, you know, the child decides on the day, oh, do you know what, I really don't want to do this today, they can take a step back and walk away. But that option, I think, should always be on the table. Because the more, you know, the more opportunity you provide for those communications, those options, the better it is in the long run, rather than waiting until someone asks. We don't always know how to articulate our needs. We don't like asking, because what if we get rejected?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us struggle with that. We feel rejected from our birth families. We feel rejected in our personal lives. No one wants to go to the person who's picked them and say, can I have this? Oh, no.
Yeah. Where are we now? Such wise and honest comments, Don. All prospective adopters and all new social workers should be encouraged to meet adult adoptees and to watch a brilliant presentation like this. Do we know if this happens in many authorities? It didn't on my adoption training. What's your thoughts on that? I've got some thoughts on it.
I absolutely think it should be integral. I think anyone that works with children that are in care and children that are going to be adopted should be speaking to adult adoptees, because they've lived the experience. Who can advise you better on what to do than the people who've gone through it and know what has worked and what hasn't worked, and also what they need? I don't think enough of it exists right now at all. I would say a lot of adoptees feel unheard, and also I think a lot of them maybe have things to say that don't resonate with a lot of people, or people don't necessarily agree, so they feel uncomfortable voicing it. Because no one wants to be told that, oh, well, your experience is just one person's and we don't believe it. But you have to hear all of it. You have to hear from the person whose adoption was great and a really positive experience, but you also have to hear from the person who is angry that they're adopted and isn't grateful that it happened. You do have to hear it all.
Thank you. We've answered that one about bullying. So that's come up a couple of times. So it's quite prominent, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, any that we can't answer, obviously. If you're going to stick around, you can answer them.
Yeah, stick around
by
them.
Typing. Did your parents ever explain to you why they didn't want you to, or weren't supportive of you contacting your birth family? So that kind of goes back to the question where you weren't even aware that it was happening, I guess.
Yeah, originally I didn't know, and then when I found out, my parents have obviously a preconceived idea based on the information they were provided when they applied to adopt. They don't like my birth family because of that information, and therefore don't encourage the contact. I think that's partly because they're protective and they want what's best for me, and they don't feel like that's best for me. And partly also I think it probably to an extent feels like a slight to them. I don't think they would ever voice it like that to me, but they are my parents in their head. You know, they've brought me up since I was young. They love me the way no one else loves me, and they don't want to share me with someone else. Then they know they do. They know there are other people that are my parents, but I know my mum and dad don't like them, and I call my birth parents my parents. They don't discourage it. They don't stop me. But they definitely like shudder when they hear it, or like you can see a physical reaction. So yeah, I think part of it is wanting to protect me, and part of it is also wanting to move forward as a family unit and not have to deal with it.
Yeah. My son wants to see siblings who are also adopted, but their parents don't think it would be a good idea for them. How can I support my son with this?
That is a good question.
It's a very good question.
I mean, I would say your number one step is to explain to your son what you are doing to support that, in terms of you have reached out, this is the feedback you've got, and he might not understand that right now, but if you you know, look back in 10 years time, 5 years time, and he can see that you were supportive, should the time come when those kids are grown up and they do reach out for him, then he knows that you've been there and you can go through that journey again. I would also advise those other parents to speak to an adult adoptee. Tell them to come and speak to me. Tell them to go on Twitter and see why people think that that reunion is good before they dismiss it entirely. Maybe send them some resources if you can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What would you have liked your birth family to have known about you in the letterbox contact when you were growing up? And thank you for a brilliant talk.
You're welcome. That I was happy and healthy, and probably just that, you know, everything else I wouldn't have minded you, that my favourite colour was green, that I'd fallen over at school and I had a plaster, just really mundane stuff mostly. I probably wanted them to feel like they were more involved in my life. You know, when you come home and you tell your mum that a kid wiped a booger on your jumper at school and a boy pulled your hair, stuff like that. I want them to know, so the next time they write, they could be like, oh, did that boy pull your hair again? Did you fall out? Have you made friends with so-and-so?
Yes, yeah. So kind of having that conversation rather than just information.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you give an adopted child too much information if it's negative about their biological family?
That's, I don't think you can ever give too much information. I just think you have to stagger when you give it. It has to be appropriate and make those conversations appropriate to the age. I mean, I always knew I was from an abusive background from the age of 4, but I didn't know the extent of the abuse. And my mum and your daddy hurt me as I got older. This is how they hurt me. This is actually also, as I got older, the extent and the depth of who it affected. You can have those conversations in a way that's appropriate, because it happens on TV shows, you know, it happens in books. You can definitely find a way to relay that information.
Mm-hmm. Fab. Oh, well, there's many more questions for you to answer. And Al's back.
Yeah.
And my adult adoptee is sitting putting his shoes on to go out just in front of me when I asked that last question. And he's sitting there nodding his head saying, yeah. So,
Dawn, I've just been following all of the comments on Twitter and on the questions. And I have to say, people are just genuinely overwhelmed with how helpful, informative that has been, and how honest you have been. So thank you. Please just accept everyone's gratitude that it's, you know, I don't want to butter you up too much, you know, but this
I just
is
wanna
yes
say one thing, just thank you both to both of you, because as an adult adoptee, it's so nice to be included in something like this. Our opinion is often left out of the conversation, and to be able to share it means so much. And I know that growing up I'd have appreciated it, so as an hope that other adopted kids get to see it and appreciate it too.
Thank you. It was my idea. Scott was against it.
Right. So the last speaker was, he's gone.
And what I was thinking was, we're recording it. We've recorded everything. And if, with your permission, I would love to release this one outside of the conference, because I think it's such a rich conversation with so much to take away from it. Maybe not for a few weeks, maybe do it near Christmas, but if you'd be okay with that.
Absolutely. I'd just love to share it with everyone. I think that's important to keep the conversation open and going, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we'll get it out there. And anyone who's listened to this, anyone who's got in to this point, they'll get access to it as well. Just someone's asked a question. Well, thank you so much, Dawn.
Yes, thank you, Tom.
If you could answer the zillion questions that you've got, that'll ruin your Friday night.
You'll be here till 2 a.m.
Oh, well, Scott, didn't you do well?
Me? I didn't do anything. I was only asking questions. Dom did amazing.